We know today is going to be the official first day of spring for 2023, but at the same time, we just got some new information from the CDC. It says tick-borne illnesses across the United States are already up 25%. And right here in Connecticut, Yale scientists are pointing to one of the factors causing the increase in these diseases because of a shorter winter, rather a lack of a winter, which is what we went through here in Connecticut. The CDC specifically, though, has put out an alert for what's called babesiosis. It's a tick-borne disease transmitted from the bites of certain ticks. They could be asymptomatic infections or cause mild to severe illnesses that could become fatal. Officials say the infection is very common in the Northeast, Connecticut included. In fact, we typically see about 300 cases of this per year. But the most common, it has to be Lyme disease, right? That's what you're most familiar with. And we got connected a while back with Jessica Snyder, who is the founder and executive director of Partner in Lyme. It's a nonprofit organization that financially supports Connecticut residents who are battling a Lyme diagnosis and struggle to be able to make those payments in order to get the care that they need. So Jessica is back this morning, and we're so glad to have her here. Good morning, Jessica. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. I think I probably should have had you on all throughout the wintertime because essentially even our infectious disease experts have said tick season didn't really go away. It didn't really die out this year. Did you find that as well?
Unfortunately, we don't have tick seasons anymore. In New England, it's a year-round problem unless you're extreme northern New England. We don't get the deep freezes. And even when we get a period of a few days that are really, really cold, it doesn't do anything to curb the tick population. Snow, unfortunately, incubates them, isolates them, insulates them. So we just don't have seasons anymore. So people need to be aware that ticks are a year-round problem for our pets, our children, ourselves. And we need to really start thinking about using preventative measures year-round in Connecticut.
When would you say, Jessica, we lost a tick season? Like, when did we start to see that in Connecticut?
You know, I'm not sure. We started this work in 2020. And so for the past 3 years, I have not seen or heard of an ebb and flow in the tick populations. It seems to be pretty consistent. While there is less activity in the winter months, they're still very prevalent. I belong to a Facebook group in Connecticut for hiking and outdoor activities. And just recently, there was a thread about hikers and what they were seeing as they would go out on our local trails. And the comments were truly frightening. How many ticks are being pulled off of pets and hikers over the past 6 weeks? So I'm not exactly sure when the weather started affecting tick populations, but it's not a recent thing. It's only recently being discussed, and it's time to start having this conversation. So I'm really glad that you invited me on to have this conversation.
Like I said, Jessica, I think that one of the things we can do better here on WICC is maybe have you on, especially in the winter months, to reiterate that tick season is alive and well and that it does last throughout the year, because you're right. I think historically we've always been focused on the spring and the summer, and then we sort of re-alert people that, hey, we still just have a couple months left in the fall where you just got to be careful and make sure you're wearing those long sleeves and so on and so forth. But then we do always think in the wintertime, myself included. I myself have pulled a couple of ticks off of my cat and off of my dogs over the winter months, and I had to consult with my vet. I thought, this can't be a tick. What am I pulling off? And they're like, nope, those are ticks. So it's so important that, especially too, we're not thinking of even treating our yards, for example. That's usually something you do more in the spring, summer, and even fall months, but people aren't treating their yards. So even though the tick numbers may not be as high, you're not really maintaining your yard like you do in the warmer months, and ticks very well could make it into your own backyard, let alone when you're out hiking, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely. Especially people feel like if they have deer or a wildlife population, then they're at a higher risk. But that's actually not the case. The number one transmitter for ticks isn't deer. It's mice and it's rodents. So anything that has contact with the ground has the opportunity to carry ticks into your yard. So we have to be more vigilant. And there are really simple things we can do. We don't have to necessarily spend hundreds of dollars to treat our yards, although we can and we probably should, depending on where we live in Fairfield County. But we can do simple things like cleaning up leaves. So making sure that you have a barrier, you don't have a good environment for ticks to thrive in. And they do love ground cover. So things like fallen leaves, if you're not raking those up and bagging them up and disposing them, you're providing habitat for ticks. You can do tick tubes, which are very simple to do. You just use paper towel rolls, stuff them with fiber material, treat it with permethrin, and stick it in the ground. The mice will come into the tube to gather their nesting material, take it back into their habitat, and it kills the ticks. So there are inexpensive, highly effective things that you can do just to create extra insurance that the ticks are not thriving in your backyard.
So we're talking this morning to Jessica Schneider, who is the founder and executive director of Partner in Lyme. And Partner in Lyme is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. And what they do is they try to help people who are carrying the financial burdens to care for themselves while dealing with Lyme disease. And they provide $1,000 in financial assistance to Connecticut residents dealing with the diagnosis. And there are ways to apply for assistance if you go to their website, which is partnerinlyme.org. And just a really incredible organization that touches, I would think, the lives of so many. Since you came into existence, Jessica, how many people have you been able to help? I know it's only been a few years that the organization has been here, but how many have you been able to support?
We've financially supported 33 residents of Connecticut, which I'm really happy and proud to be able to offer that assistance to them. We know that $1,000 isn't enough, unfortunately, to comprehensively treat this disease, especially chronic Lyme. Chronic Lyme is not recognized by the CDC as a diagnosed disease. Therefore, it doesn't receive any insurance coverage. So treatment is 100% out of pocket, and it averages $50,000 per patient per year. And very often multiple family members are infected. My own family has that experience of having multiple people in our home infected with tick-borne disease. But what we allow the individuals to do, which is slightly different than other nonprofits, is we let them spend that $1,000 on anything that falls under the umbrella of wellness. So if it's going to give you more treatment or a secondary protocol like saunas or infrared heating mats, essential oils, new food to support a diet that you need to be on to heal. We let them spend that $1,000 that way. So very often the money that they're really focused on is for their doctors, their medications, their supplements and herbs. The $1,000 lets them go out and buy that treatment or product that they really, really wanted because they know it's going to help move them forward in their healing or give them a better quality of life by reducing pain. So we've been really just happy to be able to move people forward in their healing.
We're chatting today with Jessica Schneider, who is the founder and executive director of Partner in Lyme, a nonprofit that financially supports Connecticut residents battling Lyme disease. So you had mentioned chronic Lyme, Jessica, and how that is not covered by insurance. What is chronic Lyme?
There's two different types of Lyme disease. There's acute and chronic. Acute is when you find the tick, test the tick, know what it's carrying, which I highly recommend that everyone does, and not test through your local health department, test through a special testing laboratory that specializes in tick-borne disease. Or you notice that you have a rash, which only 30% of people get the rash, so that's not a telltale sign of Lyme. You have an opportunity to treat that. Most doctors will prescribe only 3 weeks of antibiotics to treat acute Lyme disease. Sometimes that's enough. Very often it's not enough. And what happens is the patient develops long-term symptoms that can last a lifetime. That's considered chronic Lyme. So doctors will follow the CDC's protocol, which is to call it post-Lyme syndrome. And there is no coverage for that. So patients have to find doctors that specialize in the treatment of chronic Lyme, and we do have several in Connecticut. However, they are 100% self-funded. You have to pay, and sometimes the initial payment to see the doctor for the very first time can be up to $2,000.
Wow.
And then you're going every 4 to 6 weeks, and it's average that you are not going to walk out of a doctor appointment for under $500 a visit when you add in the visit plus your herbs plus your supplements plus any medications that you need to be taking. So it's an incredibly expensive disease that unfortunately not everyone can afford to treat. So people are getting sicker and sicker. They are left untreated and they feel like they're unrecognized and unheard. And unfortunately, the number one cause of death from Lyme is suicide. And I know that that's a very hard thing to talk about, but it's a very real reality that a lot of people, especially young people with chronic Lyme, face on a daily basis.
Wow, I did not realize that. And I know that the journey looks different for some people. As you mentioned, acute, that could be taken care of in a very short amount of time. But this could be something that people live with for their lives. Typically, Jessica, any of my friends or even former colleagues who have contracted Lyme disease, they deal with like a battle of like 3 to 5 years. Would you say that's common? Does it really run the gamut? Like, what would you say the majority of people, when they are diagnosed with Lyme, what do they typically face?
It can vary dramatically. I have chronic Lyme, and I found out that I had chronic Lyme after I had COVID. My long COVID symptoms, actually very few of them were related to COVID. I had some testing done, and I had activated dormant Lyme disease.
Oh my gosh.
I began treatment this summer, and I responded well to it, and I am feeling much better. Not 100% better, but much better, and it's been under a year for me. My daughter was diagnosed 5 years ago, and she's struggling still. She has good days, and she has not so good days. So it can really vary by person. They say the average course of treatment's about 2 years with chronic Lyme, but what I am seeing and hearing and the people that I'm serving, it's been much, much longer than that, especially because Lyme can be passed congenitally. So we have helped in one family alone. We have given money to a grandmother, to her daughter, and recently this year we gave a financial gift to their five-year-old son.
Wow.
So we're seeing that this is becoming a generational impact in families. So yes, some people can heal within 2 years and go into remission, but often that's not the case. It is taking much longer from what I'm hearing and seeing to reach a place where people feel they're either in remission or they're at a place where they can live what they would consider a normal life, where they can do the things they want to do and feel the way they want to feel.
And again, for applying for assistance, you can do that directly on their website, partnerinlyme.org. Really quickly, Jessica, because I don't want to run out of time for this. I know that Partner in Lyme is presenting what's called The Monster Inside of Me, a film about the real pandemic, tackling Lyme disease and helping the public to really understand the problem at hand. And of course, this is also a way for people to donate if they can. Tell us about that. What do people need to know?
Yes, it's a very important documentary that people need to see to understand the impact that Lyme has, but also to understand that there is hope in healing and that you can recover and heal from this, especially if you have a supportive network around you of friends, family, and doctors that know how to treat you. So we wanted to bring this to a central location in Connecticut. It was screened in Ridgefield earlier in 2022. We are bringing it back, and we're going to be showing it at New River Church in Manchester, Connecticut. And we picked that because it is a central Connecticut location as you can get. It is a free event, but we would welcome and need donations to keep, you know, funding the work that we are doing. It's Saturday, April 22nd, 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock. We will be showing the movie. We will be having a question and answer period after. We have some great things to give away at the event. And we just hope that people will come. If you are impacted by Lyme, if you're working with, loving someone who's impacted by Lyme, or if you're caring for someone who's impacted by Lyme, everyone in Connecticut needs to see this movie. We, especially in Connecticut, need to understand Lyme. We need to be at the forefront of treating it and testing for it. And we can only do that if we are educating ourselves on what this disease truly is.
And of course, you can learn more information about everything Jessica and I have talked about by going again to partnerinlime.org. Jessica, thank you for the work that you do, and thank you for Partner in Lyme. I look forward to having you back on the show really soon.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
All right. Jessica, again, who is the founder and executive director of Partner in Lyme here on WACC.
He's our fiscal watchdog. Connecticut State Comptroller Sean Scanlon joins Melissa in the morning now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Welcome back, Comptroller. How are you?
I'm doing good. Welcome back. I heard you just got back from a cruise.
I did. Yes, thank you. It was very nice. Yes, our whole family did a Disney cruise. It was delightful, to say the least. Yes.
I'm a couple years away from the Disney thing, and we're trying to hold off as much as we can and save as much money as we can.
I mean, that. So the saving money, I'm totally with you. But I'm trying to think, though, Sean Scanlon, not to call you out, but are your kids older than mine? I can't remember. How old are your kids?
My oldest is 3.5, and my youngest is 7 months.
Okay, so. Fine. I'll give you a pass. Okay, that's fair. Yeah. I mean, we're kind of Disney obsessed in our family, and we only have the one. Plus, my brother's a cast member down there, so we've been taking him since he was a baby. But that's fair. A couple of years. That's fair. That's fair. I don't know why, but I thought your kids were, like, older than mine. He's almost 5. But, okay, you've got time. You're good. You're good.
If a little bit behind you.
No, that's okay. If you need any Disney tips, just let me know. I'll help you out. No
worries. I'll
call you. Yeah, exactly. So this morning, I will say, quicker than your next Disney trip, we're down to 10 more days for business open enrollment. The deadline is March 30th for the MyCT Savings Program. First of all, just a very quick recap, if you don't mind, Comptroller. What is MyCT Savings?
So half of the employees in Connecticut do not get offered a retirement plan at their job. And that's not the fault of their employer. My mom was a small business owner. She would have loved nothing more than to provide that kind of benefit to her employees, but it's really expensive. And so what the state did a couple years ago is they created this program called MyCT Savings that's run by the Comptroller's Office, in which we can offer all those employees that work at companies that don't offer them a retirement plan, we offer them one through my office at no cost to the business owner at all. And so what's happening in 10 days is that the big deadline for most businesses in Connecticut, meaning employers that have between 5 and 25 employees, again, that's pretty much most of the companies in Connecticut, they have got to log on to myctsavings.com and register with my office. And what do I mean by register? I mean, if they have a actual retirement plan already, they just tell us that and then they're all set. But if they don't, all they have to do is tell us that they don't, tell us who their employees are, and then they're done. We do all the rest of the work. We set up a retirement Roth IRA account for them, and they choose to save or not.
And I know last week you started to venture out to businesses, actually right here in Fairfield County, to let them know about, you know, this program and making sure that they enroll in time for the deadline. One of the common questions I get about this is, does this program replace a 401k?
No, it doesn't replace it. And it's basically if you run a business in Fairfield County and you offer your employees a 401k, then this law doesn't apply to you. But if you're like one of the many businesses that I met with even last Friday in Fairfield County who said, you know, we used to offer our employees a 401k and it just got too expensive with all the fees that we had to pay as business owners and it just became too hard for us to offer it. So we're signing up with your thing. They're meant to be two different options. So if you're the kind of company who loves your 401k, this doesn't change that, doesn't require you to stop doing that. This is just for people who never offered it or maybe did offer it, but they couldn't afford to offer it anymore. Now this is a free option where we can help their employees at no cost to them.
And we're talking this morning to Comptroller Sean Scanlon about the MyCT Savings business enrollment deadline, which is coming up March 30th. And are businesses required to enroll in this, or you're trying to get the word out there to make sure they know this is an option for their employees?
So the law is that all businesses have to tell us what's going on with their retirement by March 30th.
Okay. And
like I said, Melissa, so if you're running a small restaurant in Fairfield County, you got 15 employees, and you already offer your employees a 401k, you still need to go on to myctsavings.com by March 30th and let us know that that is the case. Just as the same as if you run a diner in Westport, and you got 20 employees and you don't offer them anything, you got to go on, sign up, And this is not one of those things that's going to take you hours and it's really complicated. I've heard from business owner after business owner that it's fast, it's quick, it's easy. And all, again, you need to do is go to mycitysavings.com, tell us that you don't offer a plan and who your 20 employees are, and then we do all the rest of the work for them. And then it's up to them whether they want to save or not. So far, of the people who have signed up, 85%, Melissa, have stuck with it and started actually contributing to that Roth IRA. And I think this is making a really big difference when it comes to closing that retirement gap in Connecticut to make sure that every single worker in our state at least has access to the ability to save for retirement.
And again, I want to make sure that every business owner heard exactly what the comptroller said. If you do not need this program, you are not exempt from letting the state know. So that website is myctsavings.com. And actually, if you scroll down, it's pretty clear right here. Right where employers are, you can either register. It's open, register my business, or it says certify my exemption. Let them know. What are the circumstances, I should say, the punishments, if they do not let you know by that March 30th deadline?
So right now, under the law, my office can take people to court. And I have said very clearly, I'm not doing that, right? I'm not taking small business owners to court. There is a bill going to the legislature that would give my office the ability to level a small fine should somebody not comply after a certain number of warnings. But to be honest with you, I've spent the first 3 months of my term literally traveling around the state trying to talk to businesses about this, raise awareness about it. I'm learning how to make pizza. The other day I learned how to make cupcakes. You know, I'm really trying to get the word out there about this. And we're leading with outreach, not fines and penalties. But you do have 10 days left to go. There are some penalty options that we have. But even though I'm not trying to go after, you know, mom and pop businesses, just please help me help you. This is not a burden. It doesn't take a long time. We're literally just trying to help make sure that everybody in Connecticut has access to the kind of retirement that I think that they deserve.
I can't help but notice, Comptroller, you keep bringing up eateries. Would you say that's the bulk of the businesses that really are benefiting from MyCT savings? Like, are those more of the examples that you're seeing, or are those just recent places that you've been to?
You know, it really does run the gamut. But again, whether it's a florist in Norwalk that I was at the other day, Bruce's, shout out to them. I got my wife some really nice lilies and surprised her when I came home that night, which is bonus points for me. To a little diner in Milford that I went to called Pops, right? Think about company, you know, the big companies in Connecticut, they're all offering retirement plans to their workers, and that's great. But, to people out there making minimum wage, making flowers or serving at a diner, cooking behind the counter, these are the kind of people that I really want to help because, like I said, I grew up with a mom that didn't have this at her job. And now my mom is of the age where, she's got no retirement to speak of. She does get Social Security, but it's just not enough for her to live. And so she's still out there grinding and working in her 70s. And for a lot of people, that's the story of their life, too. And I think that we have a real opportunity here to make sure that that doesn't happen to as many people.
So again, we're down to just days to make sure you either let the state know if you want to enroll in this program or you don't need it. And the website is myctsavings.com. We're talking to Comptroller Sean Scanlon this morning. Switching gears really quick to some healthcare legislation. Comptroller, it sounds like you submitted testimony recently on the drug discount card. You and I actually talked about that the last time you were on the air with us, but recap for people if they don't remember what that was about.
Yeah, so the governor has a bill this year that would allow my office to enter into this multi-state drug compact called ArrayRx. What the heck does that mean? So basically, some people on your show or listening right now would probably know that there's these drug discount cards that are out there that they can get online. They go to their local pharmacy and they, may save a few bucks on that. What this is a statewide card that benefits from the fact that my office every year, we spend about $300 million on prescription drugs for all the state employees and the retirees and their families. And so we get some really big discounts because we're buying so many drugs. And what this drug card would allow us to do is to extend the benefits of that drug discount card to everybody else in Connecticut. And so that bill had a hearing last week. I'm pretty confident that it's going to pass. And as soon as I have the ability to, We'll get the parameters of this program set up and get that card out to people so they can save some money.
So let me just understand this. $300 million, that's only for state employees and their beneficiaries, correct?
Yeah, right.
So how much more money would the state projectively have to pay for this every year if it now is open to the state?
Well, we don't pay for anything. That's the beauty of this, right? There is no added cost to the state. It's just a bunch of states working together who are each spending, you know, a lot of money like we are. There's other three other states that are in it right now. And because of the volume that we're already doing, we're able to sort of confer those benefits to non-state employees because we're buying a lot of drugs from them right now, if that makes sense. And so it's sort of like we're already getting a discount and we're able to continue giving that discount to other people simply because they are getting our business to the tune of $300 million plus whatever they're getting from all the states combined.
So do you think that the discounts will become less once you open it up to the entire state, or will the drug companies keep the deals as is?
No, I think that the discounts will remain because, again, we have incredible leverage over these companies because they want our business, right? A $300 million contract is nothing to sneeze at. And, you know, they want to stay on good terms with us in these other states. And as a result of that, I don't see them, you know, dramatically changing their prices simply because we're offering this now. And this may not work for everybody. It may not be right for everybody. But again, what we would say to people is that they take that card to the local pharmacy. They use the card. If it's cheaper to buy the drug with the card, then use it. If it's not, then don't use it. It's just another tool in the toolbox for people who are sick and tired of paying a ton of money for these drugs that in almost every other country in the world are dramatically cheaper than they are here in the United States.
And it's super shady. We've talked about this on my show actually before because my father is a health insurance broker. Actually, he's one of the top brokers in Connecticut, and he's come on before to talk about how you have to look these things up. And if you don't know about it, like half the time your doctors don't even tell you, hey, when you go to get this prescription, if you look online, you might get a discount. It's so shady. It's crazy. So this would obviously be a lot easier for people. Now, what kind of prescriptions do you think the card typically will show you discounts for? I mean, obviously there's a whole list, but where do you see people, you know, see the value in this card?
Well, right now in the three states that have this, they're seeing on average an 80% savings on generics, which is a lot of the drugs that you and I are buying, and a 20% savings on the brand name drugs. So it really depends on the sort of kind of drug that you're using, but 80% right now on the generics and 20% on the brand name is what they're seeing in the three states that have this today.
Yeah. I mean, anything is better than nothing. And if this were to pass, which it sounds like you're confident it will, how soon could we get those drug cards if we're not state employees?
Yeah. So we're still working out the timing of that and how quickly we can sort of bring that drug discount to the public. And I'll have to update you on that next time we talk. But right now, the biggest thing is getting that bill passed. So if you're listening to this today and, you know, want to see this happen, you know, call your state rep, call your state senator, ask them to support the drug discount card bill and, you know, give me the tools that I need to help lower the cost for them.
And really quick, Comptroller, does it matter which insurance you're on? Like, would this also apply to Medicare recipients?
No, because they have their own thing. But a good thing is actually happening on Medicare right now, thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act that the president passed, I think, last year. For the first time ever, Medicare is going to be able to negotiate drug prices for Medicare beneficiaries. And that sounds like something that's pretty standard, but that actually has not happened because it was banned in this country. Almost every other country on the planet negotiates for the cost of their drugs. And that is why the costs are way cheaper than they are here in America. We had a law on the books, I think back to 2003, forbidding us from doing that, which in my opinion was just stupid. Anybody negotiates for anything in the business world, government just giving people money without negotiating is stupid as far as I'm concerned. That will change that. I think that that's where we ultimately need to go as a society, but it's a start with Medicare. It's a start happening now, and this won't apply to them. But the good news is for Medicare beneficiaries that that negotiation will bring down their costs big time soon.
Comptroller Sean Scanlon, we have run out of time, but I really appreciate you coming on and tackling both of these topics with us on the show. And I know we'll be chatting again really soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Melissa.
Bye. Talk to you soon. Comptroller Sean Scanlon here on WICC.
Keep it in Connecticut.
Keep it in Connecticut.
support our local economy and keep it in Connecticut. Melissa in the Morning chats with a local business now on WICC 600.
I am excited because we have a Keep It in Connecticut here in studio. I'm pretty sure, I don't know if you know this, Annie, but I had Keep It in Connecticut launched during the pandemic. The whole purpose of it was to bring attention to local businesses, support local. And I have never had anyone in studio for Keep It in Connecticut because it was all done during the pandemic. So you are,
awesome.
You are. And your timing is excellent. I didn't even think about it, but the fact that, you know, woman-owned business, Women's History Month.
It's our month.
So I know this is the time. So I am so happy to have you here this morning, Annie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Yes, we have Annie here of Natural Annie Essentials. Where are you based?
So we are based in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Okay.
We are on Connecticut Avenue, and we moved to that location back in 2020.
Okay. So, but you got started technically in 2015, correct? What launched you to want to do this?
Yes. So we started in 20, the idea of the company started in 2015 after the birth of my first daughter, Tiffany, and she was born with a condition called spina bifida and hydrocephalus. So after her surgeries, her skin was starting to break out, and first time mom, I'm like, okay, how do we fix this? Because the medication that we got, they weren't working.
Mm.
So it just really went back to the basic stuff. You know, as I was mentioning earlier, I grew up in Jamaica with my grandparents. So we were very familiar with the herbs and the oils and the raw natural stuff that were used for healing. And that's when I found a remedy for her skin. So I fell in love with the formulation process and just started making everything in the house. I was throwing out bleach, every soap and everything, and just making everything from scratch. And at some point I was making so much now that we couldn't consume it all at home. So I was starting to sharing it with friends and family who fell in love with it. And then, you know, they encouraged me to start a business because I was trying to show them how to do it, but they were not into that side of things. They didn't want to create stuff. So that's when I did. I opened my first little Etsy shop in 2015. And then when strangers started to really buy the product and repurchase the products, I was like, okay, I guess we're onto something here.
Yes.
So that's kind of when it all started.
And I just say, because I didn't mention it before, I love your accent. I have friends who are from Jamaica, and there's just something. I've been to Jamaica, and the people there are just so beautiful, like inside and out. So I just love listening
to you
talk.
Keep it
airy. Yeah. Well, I almost want to just be like, don't talk at all, Melissa. Just let her talk for the full 10 minutes. It's just better this way. Tell us, if you don't mind, because you took something that was super personal to you and you made it into something that's become a huge success. It has also grown and expanded, which we'll get to in a minute. But you came from the corporate world before going and venturing out to entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
It was scary. It was really scary. And I left my corporate job in, 2018 to do this full time. And prior to that, I was still working my corporate job. And then when I went home at night, I would work on Natural Annie Essentials.
While raising two girls, might I add.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good Lord.
I don't know how it happened, but.
The good Lord is really good, I tell you.
It worked out. So when I left in 2018 to do this full time, it was really scary. But I enjoyed doing it, and that's really what kept me going.
That's amazing. So we're talking this morning to Annie from Natural Annie's Essentials, and you've now expanded. What happened just a few years ago?
So around 2019, we were doing this show down in Brooklyn, and because we did a lot of pop-up shops with our products. And while we were at that show, majority of the customers that came through, they were asking for candles in the sense of the Bath & Body products that we were offering.
Oh, interesting. Like a Yankee candle almost. Like they wanted those smells and that vibe around them.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So they wanted candles, but we've never tried candles before. So on the way home that night, me and my husband were like, maybe we should really try candles because this is what the people want.
This is what the people want. That's what they get.
So we started Googling on the way home from New York. Came home, we bought a quick kit on Amazon and started testing. I'm like, okay, it took a while to kind of get the right candle because a lot of science goes into candles. I mean,
right.
It looks easy, but it takes a lot of testing and a lot of trial and error. So about 6 months in, we got the perfect candle that we wanted. offered it to our customers, and you know, within another 6 months, that's literally all we were selling.
Really?
So it was all candles. And we were still doing this out of my home. So I had all the Bath and Body stuff, and now all the candle making stuff. We were literally just living on top of boxes.
Your hubby's like, I love you, but get out.
It was everywhere. I took over his basement, the washroom, the garage, sure, the kitchen, everywhere. We were just making stuff all over.
Wow.
So at some point, it was getting way too much. And still working my corporate job at this time, I'm like, yeah, one has to go.
Mm-hmm.
So we put the Bath and Body products on pause, and we've been, you know, moving forward with candles ever since.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So here we are now in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
You've left your corporate job. You took something and you've now recreated it into just a candle making business. But it's not just candle making, because now it's become almost like it to me, it sounds like almost like a paint and sip,
yeah,
but with candles.
With
Tell
candles.
Us about that.
So in January 2022, now that everything was, you know, starting to open back up and people were excited to go out and wanting new experiences, we had moved into our current studio in Bridgeport, and we had the space on the weekends because we do our production there throughout the week. And then on the weekends, we figured out, you know, since we have the space, we have the tables, we have the setup, let's try something else. So that's when we started doing the sip and pours. So that's where our guests, they can come in, make their own candles. It's BYOB, so they bring their beverages, they drink, they have snacks, and they make candles. And it's a really fun experience because we have music going. There's a DJ for every session. So while you're making your candles, there is some music. And then while we after we've poured the candles, there is a break. So they don't just have to sit around and do nothing. There's music if they want to do some dancing. We have games. There's shopping. You can also shop your candles while you're in studio. So it's really just a fun time.
So how long does it take to make a candle? Like if you go to one of these sessions, mm-hmm, how long does it take?
An hour and a half. The sessions usually run for an hour and a half. Sometimes, honestly, though, it goes way over because once there's good music,
people
hang out longer
leave.
And they don't want to leave.
I don't blame
them.
That's
one of the hardest part. Like, all right, we got another session coming up. We got to get ready. But I totally understand it's super fun. And they never do want to leave.
Yeah. So how often do you do sessions per week?
So we do currently sessions on Friday. So we have one session on Friday. And then on Saturdays, we have three.
Okay.
So we usually run on Saturday, the 12 p.m. And that's where we get a lot of the younger crowd. So
sure,
kids, parents,
you want families,
more family oriented, mm-hmm, comes around the 12 o'clock spot. And then we have another session at 3, and then the last one for the night is at 6.
That's so fun.
The 6 o'clock session is where we get our party goers. They're coming out to have a blast.
Yeah.
So they make their candles, and then they enjoy the rest of the evening.
That is so fun. Mm-hmm. And you do private events if they want to do that.
Yes, we do private events. So during the week, as long as the dates are available, we are able to accommodate, like, you know, corporate events. We do a lot of in-studio corporate events, like marketing days, offsites, and stuff like that. Also on Sundays. And we do a lot of birthday parties. So if you have like a group of 10 or more, we could throw your birthday party there. You make your candles. You celebrate your birthday. You can bring your food, your cake, whatever it is to make your party, you know, off to a success. We can accommodate that. So we do a lot of private events too on Sundays and sporadic, sometimes throughout the week.
Yeah, this just sounds like such a blast, whether it's for a date night, whether it's for a group wanting to come together, mm-hmm, a reunion, families, like you said. I just think this sounds like so much fun. So again, it's Natural Annie Essentials. And where are you located and what's your website?
We are at 1313 Connecticut Avenue, and we have tons of parking. We get that question a lot, if there's parking. But we have a lot of parking, free parking in our parking lot. Entrances in the back of the building. So again, it's 1313 Connecticut Avenue in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And our website to book a class or to do some shopping is at naturalannieessentials.com.
Okay. And you could buy online too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I even have a coupon code that I created for your listeners today.
All right. Here we go, guys. You ready?
They could get 50% off their purchases today through Wednesday if they use coupon code WICC50.
Ooh, okay, WICC50, and I'll be sure to continue giving that coupon code until Wednesday, you said.
Until Wednesday, yep.
Amazing. And again,
so
the website. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun, especially before Easter or anything big coming up. NaturalAnnieEssentials.com. And Annie, thank you so much for what you're doing, for coming in studio.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
I cannot wait to come see you.
Oh, you're going to have a ball.
Oh, I'm already having a ball in my head.
It's going to be lit.
It's going to be lit. That's what the kids say. I know. That's what I just learned from my 23-year-old sister not too long ago. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a great time. Thank you so much, Annie. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you having me here. Thank
you. Absolutely. Again, NaturalAnnieEssentials.com here on WICC.